Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we worked in the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real-life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates, as we debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, frauds, scams, and multi-level marketing. Hey, hun buds and hun bros. I have just gotten back from a week in Los Angeles because I was at Podcast Movement Evolutions 2024. It was so fun. Any other event that I've gone to has always been because I'm speaking at it. And this was actually me just going as a podcaster, like to network and to meet with brands and to meet with like companies that I work with. And it was just so cool. It was so cool. And I got to meet so many of my podcasting friends in person. And I got to meet so many incredible people, podcasters. And I cannot wait for the content that we talked about collaborating together on while we were there to like come out like 6 months from now. Like, I am so excited about the connections that I made. I just, it was good. It was so good. It's like so strange to me because this is my job and it's weird that it's my job. And so going to these things and being like recognized or meeting people you've worked with who are excited to meet, it's just strange. And it's such a cool place to be. And it was just, like I said, it was just really, really, really fun. I sat in on like a couple talks and really just sort of solidified, like, yes, we're on the right track. We're doing exactly what we should be doing. Met some really cool people who want me to come on their shows. So it's just like so much good stuff is going to be coming up. And I'm just really excited to be a part of it and to move this show and our community forward. Because you guys are like, seriously, I was bragging about how great you guys are to everybody. I'm like, I have the best listeners. I know everybody says that, but like, my listeners are incredible. So you guys, I talked you up. I just had to. All right, enough of the fun part of the podcast. Now we have to talk about the heavy part of the podcast. So today's episode starts a theme that will last the entire month of April. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. The topic of child abuse and exploitation has come up so many times on the show that I decided I wanted to dedicate a month to those stories this year. They will pop up throughout the show, throughout the year, but this month is dedicated to stories that are focused on different types of child abuse and really bringing a well-rounded educational perspective to the topic. And that brings us to today's story about a mother and her daughter and a church called iTown. I've never had to include one of these in the show notes before. But because of the legal battles between Sandy and iTown Church, I would like to let everybody know that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and or our guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any company or entity. And any information provided here is based on our own research and analysis. This content is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. And we encourage using your own discretion when listening. I also want to welcome our newest members to the Patreon, Lisa McColgan and Hippo. It's nice to have you both. If you're looking for extra content aside from this podcast, I want to remind you that aside from the Patreon, we also have our YouTube channel up and we have a Discord where you can join the community talk about whatever you want. You want a thread? Ask Michelle. She'll make you one. And lastly, before we hop into this podcast episode, I wanted to add that after we recorded this, Sandy actually created a Facebook group for survivors of iTown. So if you are a survivor of iTown or are a family member of somebody that is in iTown or need a little bit of support or a place to go to be heard and understood, there's a link in our show notes to the Facebook group. And I am going to share a couple anonymous posts that were put in that Facebook group that I saw that reminded me of our chat with Sandy and just sort of shows this pattern of abuse, because I want people to be aware of what's happening. Enjoy this episode, and we'll see you next week. When I was going through a financial hardship, I inquired if the church had some sort of benevolence ministry. I saw that they did, and I applied. I was then emailed to come to the campus and talk about my financial situation. It was basically a scolding of how I had handled my finances in the past, that the church wasn't going to pay my bills, and that if they were going to help me, I needed to tithe, and that they didn't care if I lost my car and home. After all I have done by being involved in the foster care ministry and serving on Sundays, it still wasn't enough for them. Thanks to them, I am now an atheist, and I don't believe. All they care about is money and getting more people to believe in their cult. A family friend of ours introduced us to the iTown Church. They thought it would be a great opportunity to meet new people and a place for my son to get involved. They set him up with a young adult to kind of act as like a big brother type, as he didn't have a father figure in his life. The gentleman that offered and agreed connected with my son, and my son started to trust and get close to him. And then one day, he just disappeared. We asked what happened, and no one would respond. The conversations just abruptly ended, and I never heard from him again. I used to follow Dave and Kate on Instagram. Around Easter time one year, they took a video of themselves literally in bed with each other, Dave with his shirt off singing a song. And after seeing that, I decided that it was not the best place for us. This is the model that iTown follows. When a church becomes a business. 1. Pastors function like CEOs. 2. Members are turned into customers. 3. Other churches are seen as competition. 4. Evangelicalism is reduced to marketing. 5. Church planting looks more like franchising. 6. Numbers are the primary measure of success. 7. Prayer and word study are replaced by formulas. 8. Revival is reduced to a few days fundraising program. 9. Preaching sounds more like a motivational speech. All the people do is shout, "I receive, amen," throughout the concert. I mean, service. 10. Praise and worship is turned into a performance, and the best actors are made the worship and praise leaders. 11. The Spirit of God is reduced to emotionalism, no real power of God other than hypnosis and sensationalism. 12. The saints are entertained instead of equipped. 13. Disciples of Christ have become Papa's sons, daughters, and fans. 14. The church, a living body, has now become a lifeless body. 15. A leader's empire is built instead of the kingdom of God advanced. 16. The pastor becomes the Superman, and Jesus Christ reduced to just another religious figure. Does any one of these sound familiar in this generation? Beloved, if you are under these patterns of Christianity, you are already in a cult, not the Church of Jesus Christ. Get out before it's too late. All I have highlighted above is exactly what made Jesus ask himself, "When the Son of Man comes, will he find faith in the earth?" Luke 18. Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. Today, we're telling a pretty heavy story. We're getting deep into some exploitation. We're getting deep into being a family member of a cult member who's stuck in a cult, who you're excommunicated from. And so there's lots of trigger warnings just on the topic alone. So I wanted to give you guys a heads up. But I would love to welcome to the show Sandy Rusk. How are you?
Hi, Roberta. Thank you for having me.
It is so wonderful. We have been talking for months and months. It is so good to finally hit record.
I know, right? Today's the day.
Today is the day. And can you tell everybody why today was such a significant day for you to want to record?
Yes. Today is my daughter's 27th birthday.
So we are recording this on the anniversary of something, well, near the anniversary of something that happened that we will get into as we get deeper into this story, because lots of stuff happened and you're going to want to pay attention. So we're going to tell this in a linear fashion, so we're not zigzagging all over the place.
Yes.
Let's start at the beginning, Sandy.
Sure.
You, as a young mom with your daughter, who we are also not going to be mentioning her name either, we're just going to keep some details anonymous in this episode.
Right. Well, actually, I wasn't a young mom. I didn't have my daughter until I was almost 40. I was 39, but she is my only child. And unfortunately, her dad, we were married, but he had some issues. He actually had a drinking problem. After I had my daughter, it turned out that the marriage just wasn't going to stay together. And it was more important for me to try to create a normal environment for my daughter and not raise her in an alcoholic household. So we did end up divorcing when she was about 3 years old. And so from there, I was definitely a single mom for a long time.
How did you juggle all of that? I could imagine it's really difficult being in that situation.
It really was. I'm in real estate, and the real estate market over the last, well, I've actually been in it since the mid-90s, so a long time. So I've kind of ridden the ups and downs of the real estate market in my area. And some of the time I actually worked in new home sales. So I would be in a model home with a new home builder. So it was during those times I would have regular office hours, which included every weekend. So as a single mom with that kind of schedule, it was challenging at times. Like, my mother's not close by, so I didn't have, you know, a babysitter. I had to, you know, have someone that I hired to take care of my daughter when she was much younger. And then, of course, after she started school, the juggling was a little bit easier. Part of my career also, I'm a real estate broker. And so part of the time I would be out on my own working as an independent realtor. So I did kind of both during that time, but it was a big juggle. It was always a big juggle.
You're being a mom, you're doing the thing, you're getting everything done, you're being a super mom, and your daughter develops a medical condition.
Yes, my daughter developed a medical condition that caused her to lose all of her hair. And this happened actually twice. It started when she was 18 months old, and her babysitter literally called me and said, "What is this spot on your daughter's head? It looks as if there's no hair there. What happened? Did she get a hold of your razor or something like that?" And I was like, "No, I'm not sure what you're talking about, but I'll look at it when I get there." I wasn't that concerned in the beginning because I had never heard of anything like this. And then it turned out to be a condition that literally within 4 weeks after spotting it, she was totally bald. And this was a situation that was very difficult to go through. Back then, you know, we're talking about in the late 90s, we didn't have the internet like we have today. You could not just search and find the answers to this. There was no support. There was no education. There was just really, I found one lady who was in her 70s who had the same condition that had a phone conversation with me. Really wasn't very helpful. But, you know, I was just frantically going to different doctors and trying to figure out, you know, how to handle this. And I was basically told that it was a condition that is very unpredictable. They don't really know what causes it. It's an autoimmune condition. So somehow your immune system goes awry and attacks your hair as if it's a germ. And back then I'm going, what? You can't tell me any more than this. From the time that she was 18 months old, then she regrew her hair from ages 4 to 8. She had most of her hair back. And then when she was 8, her hair all came out again. So it was, as a single mom without any support from her father, it was just devastating to go through, to say the least.
I know you're a go-getter, and I know your story too, because I'm from the future.
Yes.
So what did you decide to do about the lack of awareness and information available?
Well, the very first thing that I did when she lost her hair the second time is I was like, I'm going to get her the best custom wig out there. I'm going to figure out a way to do that. Well, I ended up finding a company that was moving to our area, and they did hair systems for the movie industry. So it was very high quality hair systems, and we went and met with them. At this time, my daughter was 8. They showed us what one of the hair systems looked like, and literally it was just beautiful. I mean, the hair was hand sewn into the cap, and you would just touch it. It was like, it felt like silk. It was so beautiful. They were like, yeah, we typically sell 2 at a time, so you have a spare, and it's $6,000. And I was like, I don't have $6,000, but let's see what we can work out. Because I am a marketing type person, I said, can I do work for you? Can we do some kind of trade out since you're new to the area? I can help spread the word about your company. And that's basically what we did. So I was able to get this beautiful hair system for my little 8-year-old. And it was fun because when we went, they let her pick out the color that she wanted. And actually, her hair color was about like yours, Roberta. It was like a, you know, a darker blonde is what her normal hair color was. So they were able to let her, you know, she picked out what was her normal hair color, and she got to pick the length and did she want it a little bit wavy or not. So she was actually having fun with this whole process. And she was 8, and it was going into like the Christmas break for school. Now she's in 3rd grade at this point. The hair that she had at this point was, you could see spots of hair loss pretty much all over. She still had some hair. I would say if I had to guess, she maybe still had 60% of her hair at that point, but we knew that it was rapidly falling out. So my thought was, let's just get this. Maybe this is going to make life easier for her, because I was terrified that she was going to go to school and, you know, she was going to be bullied or treated badly. And I made it fun for her the day that she got it. At the facility, we actually had a hair party. We had a big cake that I had made with, you know, a little girl's face on it with blonde hair. We put like hair clips on the cake and, you know, made it a fun thing for her. But and the news actually came and did a story about it that day as well. So it helped the company, and it also helped me to help my daughter. Whenever they actually got it prepped and got her ready to have it applied, they had to shave off the rest of her hair. And I could not even go in the room when that happened. Then she comes out and she just looked beautiful, and it was long, and she was flipping it around and, you know, having fun with it. And then that was over the Christmas break. But then when she got back to school, the kids didn't quite get what happened. Like this one little boy said to her, your hair really grew a lot. Since we were out for Christmas, you know, they didn't get what was happening with her. We suddenly realized at only 8 years old, this type of hair system, you actually glue it to your scalp. So there was an adhesive that had to be put on in the top, just like you can see my part here, you could see through this lace cap, and it literally looked so real. So it was very high tech and very amazing, but we suddenly realized she wasn't used to having much hair at all. And suddenly she's got all this thick, long hair, and just the upkeep and the maintenance of everything was just too much. And there would be mornings where she would be crying, I would be crying, she'd be late for school. And, you know, it was just too much for someone as young as her. So one day she just woke up and said, I'm not wearing it today. I want to go to school without this hair. And I'm like, what?
Wow.
And I was terrified that she would get to school and, you know, the kids would be mean. And so finally I thought, well, I'm going to get the people at the school to help me with this. So I said, okay, because at this point she's already late for class. So I said, just put a bandana on. And I thought, well, I'll get there. And the school nurse, the school counselor, everybody there knew our situation. She was just adamant that she was going without it that day. And even though I thought that was a bad idea, I put her in the car and took her to school. And I went in and I'm telling the school nurse and the school counselor, and they just looked at me and said, why don't you let us handle it? You just go home. And I was like, I can bring the glue. I can bring the hair if you need, call me, you know. But she was just strong enough at such a young age that she marched into class, and she was confident enough. And I think the kids were just young enough at that point that the teacher explained to them what was going on, and they were like, oh, okay, cool. And nothing bad happened.
That's all kids need. Little education.
Yeah.
Little empathy.
She was just amazing. And she was 8 years old, and she has not regrown her hair since. And she does not have hair today, does not wear wigs at all.
Wow.
In 2007, my daughter was 10 at that time. So, you know, because of the lack of information, I decided to start an organization to help, you know, educate the community, create awareness, and just offer support. Because as a parent who had gone through it, I knew that it was extremely difficult to deal with. And I felt when I spoke to a mom or a dad who had this happening to their child, because I'd been through it, then they could really relate. I could relate to what they were feeling, and they could relate to what I'd been through. And it was just a really good fit. So I created this organization, and before we knew it, we were traveling around, and my daughter then became a motivational speaker and shared her story herself. And, you know, we did a lot of amazing things. She ended up being on the Today Show when she was 14. We wrote a book. So I think that we made a huge impact out there in the world, because back then there was not even social media. And today, if you go on to, you know, even Facebook or Instagram, and you put in this medical condition, you can find tons of young girls, you know, sporting their bald head and doing their proud selfies. And, you know, I think that the awareness created a level where people could be okay with it, you know. And people were not looked at like, oh, what's wrong with that person? What's wrong with that child? And so I'm very proud of everything that was accomplished as a result of it. A lot of fun things.
You and your daughter enjoyed it then?
We did. We got to travel all around the country. We did a lot of it was in the form of road trips. So whenever we would go on a road trip, I would let her bring a friend along, and I'd figure out if we were going somewhere in Ohio, I would figure out what are the sites around there, you know, tried to make it fun. Bring your bathing suits. You could swim in the pool. We'll order room service and watch a movie, or, you know what I mean? It was just, we tried to make it fun, and, you know, we were doing something important.
So at this point in our story, your daughter's 14.
Yes.
And this is sort of when the story takes an unexpected turn.
Yes. Yes.
So let's talk about the day that you had your open house and you were working and your daughter said, hey, is it okay if I do this instead? Can you tell us that story?
Yes. Now, keep in mind, I did not grow up in a religious background at all. I didn't go to church when I was a child. I've had friends along the way who were very involved in their church. And there have been times when I had maybe visited churches, but I just didn't have a real strong connection to any church. But in my mind, I've always felt that church was a good thing, positive environment. And so one day my daughter came to me and said, hey, Mom, do you mind if I go to a church this Sunday with my friend? And I thought, church? Sure. What church? Because I knew at that point I was actually in new home sales, so I was working every weekend. And I thought, what better place for my daughter to be while I'm at my office all day on Sunday is if she wants to get involved in a church. That sounds great. So I said yes. And the church is called iTown. And the pastor for iTown Church, his name is Dave Summerall. Well, I found out very quickly that Dave Summerall is the grandson of the infamous, I don't know what you would want to say, Lester Summerall. I had heard of Lester Summerall. I didn't really know much about him, but I knew that he had been, you know, one of the first kind of TV evangelists back as early as the 60s. And this gentleman was his grandson. That's all I knew at the time. Also, I started attending as well. I would pop in, you know, attend a service, and say, see, my daughter may be in the lobby, because she was, from day one, she was just all in. It's very much a mega church environment. And the one thing that it had, and it was kind of new in our area, because this was 2011, is that they had the rock concert environment. Like, it's when you walk into the church facility, it's like an auditorium that's dark. There's laser light shows. There's, you know, smoke that comes out. And it is very much geared as very trendy, young music. And my daughter just loved it.
Right. And iTown is actually a member of ARC Churches, which is connected to Hillsong. So that mega church vibe that everybody's feeling right now, going, oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely, 100%. You are right on it. You're following along perfectly.
Yes. The ARC, as you mentioned, is the Association of Related Churches. And they're an umbrella organization that they call themselves a church planting organization. My feeling is it's very similar to almost like a franchise scenario where some of the tithing money kind of goes up, which is something you're very familiar with, Roberta, with your MLM experience. And I don't want to speak too much about that because I don't know the structure personally that well, but my impression just that it's very much like a franchise environment. And the fact that you mentioned Hillsong, when they brought their presence to the United States from Australia, where Hillsong began, that was Carl Lentz, was the young pastor in New York. And the starting of Hillsong in New York was actually coincided directly with when iTown began here in the area that I live. So there seems to be a lot of similarities between, you know, the style and the format.
Mm-hmm. Strange coincidences.
Yes. But my daughter seemed very happy there. And because I went and attended, I really didn't know what to look for because I never known much about church environments. But the one thing that I never felt like you couldn't trust a church environment. Especially, it was very popular. There were a lot of people in our area who thought it was the greatest thing ever. My daughter thought it was the greatest thing ever. I would go in and attend a service, and it was certainly entertaining, you know? And he's very charismatic. He had a cute little blonde wife. They have a cute brood of kids. I think at that time they had 4. I think they're up to 6 now. And I just didn't see any reason not to trust the situation. But it was very quickly that I realized that my daughter wanted to be there all the time. She was still involved in our organization. So we would do traveling and she was still involved in that. She was in high school full time. She was in the high school drum line. So that was a big commitment as well. Back when I was in high school, if you were in the band, that was kind of a nerdy thing to do. I didn't know until my daughter that the drum line was like this really cool thing. Like all the hot guys were in drum line and, you know, she just jumped all in on that too. So she had a really crazy schedule, really crazy. But whenever she would say, hey, we've got this event this weekend at iTown and, you know, I'm going to be there every night until 10 o'clock, I'm thinking, she's working, you know. What great work ethic is my daughter creating because she's able to juggle this crazy schedule and not complain about it, you know. She was just all in.
Right. You already knew that she was a go-getter because of all of your guys' advocacy work and all of the appearances that she had done throughout that career.
Right.
So you knew she was a hard worker. You knew that she was built for this sort of thing.
Yes. She really felt like she was way above her years. You know, she just had a very, I don't know how to explain it. She was just very mature for her age, or some people might say she's an old soul. I don't know if that really means anything, but, you know, she was like a little adult when she was as young as 8. So I was obviously extremely proud of her. I mean, the day that she took off her hair and walked into her classroom at 8 years old was like the bravest thing I've ever seen anyone do. Not only did she want to do it, but she insisted that's what she was going to do. She like fought me over it almost that morning. And then to be able to just get up on a stage when she was her first speech that she gave, she was only 10 years old.
Do you ever wonder how much of your personal data is out there on the internet just for anyone to find? I promise it's more than you think. Your name, contact info, social security number, home address, even information about your family members. It's all being compiled by data brokers and openly sold online. This can lead to a lot of problems, including identity theft, phishing attempts, harassment, and unwanted spam calls. But now you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. Signing up for the service is super easy. Just provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. They send you regular, personalized privacy reports showing what info they found, where they found it, and what they removed. I got my report, and I was floored with the results. Of the 105 data brokers they checked, 83 of them had my data. Delete Me then removed 173 listings of my personal data off the internet, and they make sure that it stays off too. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me at a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and use promo code MLM at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and enter code MLM at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/MLM, code MLM.
Her story had been featured in a local magazine here called Indianapolis Woman Magazine. And I got a call from a lady who had seen the story, and she called me and said, I'm hosting an event. It's called the Healthy Choices for Girls event. It's down in Bloomington, Indiana. It's coming up, and it's a 3-day event. And we want your daughter to be a guest speaker. And I was like, she's 10. I don't know if she could be a guest speaker. What do you want her to talk about? She goes, just share her story. You know, we saw it in the magazine and think that she'd be a positive influence on all the other girls. And there's going to be 200 young girls, and they are between the ages of 11 and 14. And my daughter is 10. And so she said, here's the deal. If you guys want to come down, she can attend the whole weekend event for free. She can bring a friend. In addition to that, we'll cover all of your traveling expenses, the 2 nights in the hotel, all of your food. She told me that they would pay my daughter $250 to do this. And I said, well, I don't know. Let me talk to her. Sounds good. I think she would enjoy it. She would love the $250, I'm sure. So I went to my daughter and said, hey, this is what the lady said. What do you think? And she's like, they're going to pay me $250. I can do it. And I was like, are you sure? Okay, are you going to write your speech to do this? No, well, I'm just going to wing it. And I'm like, what? And finally, I talked her into doing a PowerPoint, because back then, you know, kids were just learning to do PowerPoints in school. And so she put some pictures on there, and she just got up in front of this audience and just knocked it out of the park. It was amazing to see her be able to just get up on a stage at such a young age. And she had a natural ability to be able to touch her audience's emotions. You know, she could make the audience feel very sad, and then the next minute she could have them laughing. That's an amazing ability. You know, speakers normally try to learn how to do that, and she just knew how to do it when she was so young. So I was very proud of her. And we had, during that time, we had a typical mother-daughter relationship. I'm sure it wasn't perfect, but considering all the challenges that we had, scheduling especially, we seemed to have fun. You know, her friends liked to come and hang out at our house, and it all seemed normal as could be.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to be a mom, and it's hard to be a kid. And you guys were both doing it for the first time. So,
right.
You have problems. You have troubles. Things happen. That's normal.
Sure.
My daughter and I get in little tiffs, and then we talk it out and we're fine. Like 10 minutes later, it's totally normal. It's mom and daughter behavior. Absolutely. It's healthy, actually, to hit those and to have conversations and to work through those things. It sounds like you have a very strong, independent, brilliant, bright daughter. I would be very proud, too.
Oh, I was so proud. I just never knew that we could get through all of that. And then on top of it, her dad not being in the picture as well, you know, so.
Yeah.
And I did not remarry. I didn't have much time for having a relationship, you know what I mean? So.
Right.
And I know as a mom, you can probably relate a lot to everything that I'm saying, Roberta.
There's a lot. So your daughter is working part-time at the church, volunteering, doing her own thing, living her life, having friends. And then she turns 18. So let's talk about the role and the involvement of church in her life around that time.
Well, she graduated from high school. And she, up until that time, from the very beginning, she started attending iTown Church. Then very quickly, they decided to have her volunteering. So she jumped right in, and she was very involved in their children's ministry, kind of babysitting the children when families come in. And I think that they took it a little bit further than that, where there was a little bit of a class-type environment involved. Again, this was all new stuff to me. When she graduated high school, she decided that she wanted to be somehow involved in the deaf community. So she even volunteered at our local community deaf services center for one summer. And she had picked that she was going to go into deaf education was what she wanted to pursue. In our area, we're very close to Ball State University. It's about a half-hour drive up the highway from where we live. And so she selected Ball State. So she graduated high school, and that fall, you know, we got her registered and took her up there and got her moved in just like any other parent, you know, getting their child involved in college. And she was very excited about what she had chose to pursue. And I thought also, because she's so good at motivational speaking, that she would probably do some of that on the side. I did not in any way try to convince her to take over our organization when she started to be less involved in that because of her schedule. Then I started to pick up the slack from it. And like when she would get invited to go and do a speech or help a family with a child with this condition, I would ask her if she wanted to do it. And she would say, well, I'm really too busy, Mom. So, and then I would jump in and say, well, if you don't want to do it, then maybe I'll just go and speak at this child's school because I do want to help this family. So it kind of, there was kind of a shift in the organization from her and I doing stuff together to her kind of taking a step back and me taking over. She went away to school and she seemed to be enjoying it. She had a boyfriend and he went to Ball State as well. In January of that year, which would have been 2016, they broke up. Within probably a week, I guess through the grapevine, it must have gotten back to iTown that she didn't have her boyfriend any longer. So she got a call from them and they asked if she would be willing to drive down on the weekends and come back to work part-time on the weekends. And that's what she did through the rest of that year. And I was kind of happy about it because I was like, oh, that means she's going to be here more and I might get to see her more.
It just seems very interesting that like the church knew about her personal life enough to be like, she's single. Her weekends are free. Let's get her booked up for the weekends.
Yes. And I didn't really think that at this time. Now, keep in mind, around this time, I could tell that my daughter was pulling away from me to a certain extent. Like, she didn't spend much time with me. But I thought that was really just all normal. She's off at college now. She's growing up. You know, I wasn't really upset about it until the big red flags started hitting. And the very first one that hit is when she came home at the end of that semester, which would have been like May of 2016, they sat her down there at iTown and asked her, would she be willing to quit college and come on staff there full time?
Wow.
I knew nothing about this conversation until it was already over and my daughter had already agreed to it. At this point, my daughter had just turned 18 in January of that year. When these red flags started, and this was the first really big one, I didn't have a spouse to talk this over with and make mutual decisions about our daughter. When this first thing happened, my first reaction was, no, you cannot quit school and go to work full time at this church. But then I kind of talked myself down. Well, if this is her calling and this is where her heart is, she could always go back to school later, I guess. She was so determined that I kind of allowed my guard down. Long story short, I finally agreed. And so that's when things really started to take a turn.
So she quits college, decides to work at the church full time.
And her salary was only $24,000 that year. So she gave up her college career to take on a job where it's not like a major corporation where there's tons of possibility for opportunities coming up to move up the ladder. You know, it's just not set up that way. Because beyond the type of job she had, then everybody else were potential like pastors. And, you know, she wasn't in that realm yet. That was the first big red flag. Well, then I got immediately hit with the second big red flag. You know, once I'd gotten over the shock and agreed that, okay, I guess this would be fine, I said, oh, you're going to be coming back and living at the house. We're going to get to see more of each other. And she goes, well, Mom, you know, I really want to be out on my own. And I'm like, well, what does that mean exactly? Because I doubt you're going to get paid enough to go out and get your own apartment. So are you thinking you're going to get an apartment with a few roommates? What are you talking about? And she's like, no, there's this family. They're part of iTown and their names are Alex and Kelly Yater. And I did kind of know these people, but I wasn't on any kind of friendship basis with them. They have this house out in the country. Some of the people from iTown actually go and stay there when they're in transition. And I'm like, okay. Again, I'm thinking something about this does not feel right, but I talked myself down one more time. I was like, now think about this, Sandy. Do you want her out in an apartment with girlfriends doing heaven knows what? Or would it make more sense for her to be in an environment where there's parents and little kids there? And it's like this real pretty house kind of out in the country. They have this barn out in the back where they host like things for the church. And I thought, well, would that be kind of an okay transition for her kind of out into the world? And again, I trusted these people that I should not have trusted with my daughter. I mean, when I look back on it, if I knew then what I know now, I would know everything about these people before I even let my daughter go there for 2 hours in the evening, much less let her move in with them. So basically, they moved her into the home of people from the church.
So easily.
That's when the next big red flag happened. I'm blindsided by everything. I'm confused by what's happening. My daughter's distant from me now. Is this normal? You know, is it normal for her to go out on her own and choose to go and live in this household with this family? I mean, it didn't feel normal, but then again, I talked myself down because they had a family environment there. Plus, they were part of the church. You know, they pray.
Right. They must be good people.
Yeah.
I completely understand thinking that your child, even though she is over 18, but she's still your child. She'll always be your child.
Of course.
Feeling safe and secure going, oh, well, she's going to be living with people from the church. Those are good people. Mm-hmm. They're all there together. They all know each other. They're all from the same community. Yeah. You would feel very comfortable. You would feel very safe doing that.
Yes.
Especially because they've really sort of been grooming this the whole time.
Right.
Since 14. At this point, she's 18, 19 years old.
Right.
So you said the next big red flag. What was that?
There's some things that happen that I don't really feel like we have to go into too many details on. But there were a couple of things that happened with me and my daughter where we had a disagreement because she ended up, after living with them for a couple of years, she went to a rental house that I owned with a couple of roommates. And she was just suddenly, I mean, very distant with me. And I was trying to get her to talk to me and she didn't want to talk to me. And it was nothing that a typical mother and daughter disagreement would have been like. You know what I mean? There was like one day when I literally just came to the house that she was renting and made her come out and sit in my car with me and talk to me because I'm like, I don't understand what's happening. Why are you so distant? You know, because I'd make plans with her and she would make excuses. And the entire time she lived in this house, which I owned, there was not one time where she had me over to eat dinner, watch a movie, just be there with her. Not one time in the 2 years that she lived in this house. So her and I were having a little bit of a conflict over that, but it wasn't anything crazy. I mean, there was never screaming matches between us. There was never, you know, slamming doors. I hate you, Mom. Nothing like that. You know, it was just very unsettling to me that I don't understand what's going on. But during this time, I continued to still kind of pop into watch services. And at this point, by the time things happened in 2020, I had been involved at iTown off and on for like 7 years, you know. And I never really felt super welcome there. Like, people never came up and tried to become friends with me. They never invited me. There's not one person in the entire time that I was there that ever prayed with me. Not once. In 2019, she suddenly tells me that she wants to move out of the little house. And that was just prompted by the fact that I stopped by that day to talk to her, and she didn't like it, I guess. So I find out that she abruptly moves out of the house, and she moves into the home of one of the pastors from my town. His name is Adam Bender, and his wife, Nancy, suddenly moved my daughter into their home. And this was like, the red flags just kept getting bigger, if you know what I mean. What pastor moves a young girl into their own home? Didn't make any sense. She moved out in May of that year. And in August of that same year, iTown had built a new building. They now have a $22 million building that is your typical megachurch building. I was still trying to have a relationship with my daughter, so I would still go and attend the services. My model office was very close to where the church was, so I'd pop in. If I walked into the front door and saw my daughter in the lobby, I would go up and say hello to her and, oh my gosh, honey, you look so cute in your outfit, you know, stuff like that. Just pleasantries that you would have mother and daughter. And she might say, oh, I'm really busy right now, Mom. And I'm like, that's okay. I'm just going in to watch the service. Love your outfit. You know, maybe we can get together this week. Love you, sweetie. Bye. That was it. There was no arguing in the lobby. There was nothing that, just nothing bad had happened. If I walked into the building and she wasn't anywhere to be seen, I would just go into the service, watch the service, and leave and go to my job. Nothing bad happened. There was a couple of times where I needed to speak to her. Once I needed her to sign a legal document for me that had something to do with this little house that I owned. Because after she moved out, I decided to sell the house. And I needed her to sign something because, kind of a long story, but the HOA in this community didn't want any more rental properties in the community. And they had said to me, well, you've got renters in your house. And it's like, it's not a renter, it's my daughter. And two friends live there. And they're like, her name's not on the deed. So she's not an owner. So she's a renter. And I went back and forth with them. And as a realtor, I was like, I'm a realtor. Do you realize I can just put her name onto the deed? And so just to keep things simple, I just went ahead and put her name on the deed. And then a year later was when this was happening. And when she moved out, I decided to sell the house. And so I sold the house, but then her name was still on the deed. So I needed her to sign. It's called a quit claim deed, to take her name off of the deed so that I could then close on the house. And she wouldn't respond to me about it. And then I had to actually go and try to see her. And when I drove to this house where I knew that she was living, I saw her on the street. And as I was going this way, she turned in right beside of me and then just drove away, like sped away. And I'm like, I've got to talk to her about this. I've sent her 3 emails that she didn't respond to. And there was no like high-speed chase or anything like that, Robert. It was just like, what is going on? What is happening with her? And so the people that she lived in their house, I called and left a message stating, can you please tell her to reach out to me about it? And I was probably annoyed, but I wasn't yelling on the phone or anything like that. I just said, I just saw her. I need for her to do this for me. So the next day, they must have told her, whatever your mom needs, get it to her. And so she did. And then she left it there at the iTown Church office. And I stopped in and picked it up, and that was all taken care of. That was it. No, nothing more than that. In November of that year, now this is 2019, when they moved out of the little house, the 2 roommates moved out. She had moved out in May. They moved out in August, put the house on the market, immediately sold it, went through the closing. When I closed on the house, I forwarded all of the mail from the little house to where I live. Because, you know, I got things like utility bills and things there. So this piece of mail comes in the mail one day in November. So 6 months after she's moved out. don't notice it. It's got a forwarding sticker on the envelope. Don't notice that it's got my daughter's name on it. So I open it up and realize it's a check for her. It was some kind of refund check that was like almost $500. And I was like, well, I don't know what this is, but I'm sure she's going to love this extra $500 check coming in the mail to her. And so I reached out to her via text. She didn't respond. And I thought, well, I'll just go to church on Sunday. I'll just take it to her then. So Sunday, I walk in. There she is. I walk right up to her and say, hey, sweetie, this came in the mail for you. And she looks in it. And she goes, well, what is it, Mom? And I said, well, I don't know, but it's addressed to you, made out to you. And she goes, okay, well, thanks for bringing it, Mom. Well, I'm busy. I got to go. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go in the service, sweetie. See you later. Bye. And that was that. Now we're getting into 2020, and this is when the red flags of red flags happen.
Now we're up to the 4-year anniversary that we talked about at the very beginning of this.
Yes, that we just passed 4 years ago, January 23rd. So January 23rd of 2020, a friend of mine who lives right near there, her and I were going out to lunch. And so we're driving right by I-Town Church. And all of a sudden I had this strange thought of, could you pull up to the door and let me just go in and say hi to my daughter? And she's like, yeah, no problem. She pulls right up to the door. Now, keep in mind, I've never done this before. I've only been in that building the one time to pick up the document she signed for me and to attend church there. Have never had any problem with anyone there. These people have been around me for over 7 years at this point. Before that, I had actually sold 5 different people houses from I-Town. One of those was one of their pastors. No problems with any of that. And I'd certainly never been told I wasn't welcome there at any point. I walk in and just say, hey, is the lady behind the front desk, and didn't know who she was at the time, but I later learned her name is Emily Pratt. She was the front desk manager at the time. And I was just like, oh, hi, by chance, is my daughter here? And she goes, no, she's not here. And I cannot share any information with you about her. I'm like, what?
That's strange.
I'm her mom, and I'm just in the area, just wanted to say hello to her. And she's like, just a minute. She picks up a car key, goes behind a locked door, comes back out a couple of minutes later. And in the meantime, I'm getting all kinds of weird vibes, right? She comes out, she stands behind the counter, folds her arms like this and says, no, I can't share any information with you about her. And I'm like, what is going on? Out walks one of the pastors. Now, this is one of the pastors that I had been around for 7 years. We've never had any conflict. There's never been anything. And he's like, hey, how's it going, Sandy? His name's Eric Neal. I go, well, I'm a little confused. And I told him what just happened. And I said, can you talk to me? And he goes, well, I've got a couple minutes. I've got some people coming in, but I've got about 2 minutes I can give you. And I'm like, okay, I'll take that. So he gets the card key. We go behind the locked door. We go into a little conference room. And I'm like, this is what just happened. I'm just in the area and wanted to say hi to my daughter. What's going on? And he just looks at me and he goes, well, I can't share any information with you about her either. And I'm like, I'm not asking for information about her. I'm just wanting to say hello to her. And he's like, well, I know that you and your daughter have had problems in the past, and I can't tell you anything about her. And I'm like, problems? What problems are you talking about? And he goes, that's all I can say. Now, keep in mind, this is a pastor. Don't you think the first thing that a pastor would do in that situation is pray? I don't know what's going on with you, but let's just pray about it. Did not do that at all. And wouldn't you think, since I had known this pastor all this time, if there was a problem between me and my daughter, that he would be the person that I could talk to about it? I mean, isn't that the role of a pastor to help in situations? It was not a situation that I even realized there was any kind of a problem. I said, I really don't understand what's going on here. You're a dad, Eric. What would you think if someone was telling you something like this about one of your children? And he goes, that's all I can say. I can't help you. Oops, my appointment's coming in. I gotta go. And I walk out into the lobby and I'm just like, what just happened? I'm standing there at the front desk and I think about Dave Summerall's wife, whose name is Kate Summerall, who is also one of the pastors there at I-Town Church. And I said, can I make an appointment with Kate Summerall? Because I just don't know what's happening, right? Now, wouldn't you think that I could speak to Kate Summerall if I needed to? And the lady behind the desk who I mentioned earlier, Emily Pratt, said you would have to email her assistant because she doesn't really take appointments that often. But here, and I said, well, that's fine. I'm not being rude to anyone. I'm just like, okay, well, that's fine. Could you write her email address down for me and her name? And she writes it down on a pink post-it note and hands it to me. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll just email her. That's no problem. And then as I'm getting ready to leave, I thought, well, I know this friend that also works there. Her name is Jill. And I had met her before. And I was like, by chance, is Jill around? And she goes, no, she's not here either. And I said, oh, well, here's one of my cards. If you could just tell her I stopped in to say hi to her, no problem. And I leave. That's it. Walk out, get in the car with my friend. We go have our lunch. Nothing. My head is spinning. Like, what just happened here? A church doesn't act like this. And I'm confused. I'm upset. I don't know what to do. But I try to just go and have lunch with my friend and put it out of my mind. This was on a Thursday. January 23rd of 2020 was on a Thursday. And I was there at lunchtime because we were going to eat lunch. Friday went by. Saturday went by. I'm thinking about it. And then on Sunday, I decide I'm going to email the lady that I was told to email to see if I could get the appointment with Kate Summerall. So I sit down at my desk and just very nicely wrote out, Amy McDonald was her name. And I said, Amy, I was told that you were Kate Summerall's assistant, and I wanted to see if I could schedule an appointment to meet with her. And could you share this information with her? And I wrote something very nice on there. I was like, you know, Kate, you and I have never really spent any time. I mean, this woman had never had a conversation with me, ever. And I said, we don't really know each other, but, you know, I'm the mom of your employee. And I would like to just see if I could meet with you, you know, and talk with you about something. Again, very nice. Like, I didn't say, hey, I came in there and I was treated wrong and nothing like that. Monday morning, I get an email back from this Amy McDonald. And the email says, I just want to let you know that Kate really doesn't take appointments, but I'm going to put you in touch with one of our other women pastors. Her name is Heather Chalk, and she'll be glad to meet with you. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. And she was very nice in her email. She said, I'm copying Heather on this email along with you. Heather, this is Sandy. Sandy, this is Heather. So you guys feel free to just work out a time. And Heather's very nice. She says, are you available to meet, let's say, Thursday morning at the Starbucks in, not at the church, at the Starbucks down the street? And I thought that was kind of weird, but whatever, you know, maybe that's close to where she lived and that would work out better for her. So I'm like, yeah, that's fine. So this was on Monday morning. So my communication with those two had been fine, right? Monday night, I go to my mailbox and it is a letter from Itown Church stating that I am no longer allowed on the property of Itown. It is CC'd to the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office.
It's a restraining order?
Not yet. Not yet.
Not yet.
But that's coming. That's coming. So that was on Monday night. I get this. And I'm reeling from this. I'm like, I have been around these people for over 7 years. I trusted them with my daughter. And suddenly they're telling me I'm not welcome on their property because I stopped in to say hello to my daughter. There was no conflict. Now, keep in mind, this is a $22 million building, Roberta. If there had been anything that I had done out of place, it would have been on camera. They would have called the police instantly if I had done anything wrong. If I would have gone in there and made a scene and threw chairs around and whatever. But nothing like that happened. It happened just the way I just described it to you. So as I'm reeling from that, I know that I have this appointment coming up with Heather on Thursday. So I'm trying to get through the day. Now, keep in mind, Monday was the 27th. The 28th is my daughter's birthday. So I just sent some text messages to her. I didn't get into anything about what happened. I just wished her a happy birthday. Didn't hear anything from her that whole day. The next day, January 29th, let's see, it would have been Wednesday. I am in my apartment at 7:30 at night, and there is a loud banging on my door. And I peek out the peephole, and it is a Hamilton County sheriff in full uniform. And he's like, are you Sandra Rusk? And I said, yes. And he goes, I've got some documents that I need to serve you with. And I'm like, okay. And I kind of opened the door and I let him step inside. And he goes, do you know who? And he says, my daughter's name. Do you know who this is? And I said, yes, it's my daughter. But the way he handled me, he just looked at me right in the eyes with kindness. And he said, oh, honey, I am so sorry. He goes, here's what you need to do. You need to go to the Hamilton County Courthouse and ask the clerk for an appeal form. And I'm like, okay. And I did exactly what he told me to do. Let me just leave that there for a second, because the next morning was my meeting with this other pastor, right? Now, at that point, like, I couldn't even comprehend what had just happened to me. Now, if I had to have that meeting with her today, I would be able to say, I'm so organized about this thing now, and I know it inside and out. But back then, I was blindsided. I had no idea what was even happening to me. And so she sat and she talked to me and didn't really accomplish anything. She said, well, are you and your daughter having a lot of problems? And I'm like, no. She didn't offer to help in any way. She didn't offer to pray with me, nothing, right? And so we end the conversation and nothing got accomplished. So the next day, Friday, is when I did what the sheriff had told me to do, was to go and get this appeal form and appeal this protective order. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a protective order. I hadn't. I didn't really know what was in there. But you have to create these incidents that are things that this person has supposedly done to you that made you fearful in some way. They've threatened you. They've harmed you. They've stalked you. You know, something like that. These incidents that were listed, one of them was the fact that I brought my daughter's piece of mail and I had opened it. That was one of the incidents that I did that was wrong. Then the incident that I tried to get the document signed from her made it sound like I went to her home and like followed her in my car, like a high-speed chase or something. They didn't make it sound like iTown Church was a church that I had been attending. They made it sound like I had just came to her employment. If you showed up once a week at your daughter's employment, that could be a problem. But that wasn't it at all. I'd been attending this church for 7 years. And then three incidents were literally made up. Like, they said that I came in and they didn't have dates. They had like, oh, sometime in December of 2019, Sandy came in to the place of employment, spoke to the front desk manager, Amy McDonald, and demanded information about and refused to leave. Just things that were just made up.
Wow.
I never even met this Amy McDonald that I emailed with, but I had never met her. I knew none of these people. So in this protective order of these six incidents, they had 12 people listed as witnesses. And they were just the Yaders that my daughter lived in their home. They were two of the witnesses. Pastor Eric Neal that I met with was listed as a witness in several incidents.
Wow.
It made no sense. As I'm trying to figure all this out, and I don't know who to turn to, I don't know what to do, I get a notice that I have to come to court. And I don't think it's going to be like a courtroom setting, like a court hearing. I'm just thinking I'm going there to like meet with someone to talk about what happened, right? Oh, it is a full-blown court hearing with my daughter and me. And guess who shows up? Six people from iTown Church, including two pastors. And the judge treated me like I was some kind of criminal. It was the craziest thing I have ever experienced in my life. And the judge was wanting me to act like I was an attorney. He's like, oh, you can cross-examine the witness. I'm like, I'm not an attorney. I don't know how to do this. And he's like, well, you ask questions.
If only it was that easy.
Yes, I have the entire transcript from the court that day. I found out a year later that I could get that. So now I know exactly what happened in there. The only person that was there, like Emily Pratt that was at the front desk, just happened to not be there. So the only person in all of these 10 people that were listed, only one person engaged with me at any point who was in court that day was Pastor Eric Neal. When my daughter was testifying, she said that she was not there the day that I came in. She got a call from one of her coworkers telling her that I had been there, demanded information about her, that I wanted to know where she lived, what her contact information was, and how much money she made. That never was even mentioned. So then when I get the opportunity to cross-examine Pastor Eric Neal, I asked him, it was stated earlier that I asked all this information. Did I ask any of that? And he said, no, that wasn't part of our conversation. And I said, well, when I was there and you were the person that I talked to, was I rude? Was I inappropriate? Was I loud, disruptive in any way? And he goes, no, you weren't. So the only person that was there to testify that I had done something wrong admitted I didn't do anything wrong. The judge then goes on to admit that he has attended I-Town Church in the past. And guess what? He ended up putting the protective order in place for 2 years.
Wow.
2 years I could not even contact my daughter. And I even asked the judge when I was in there, I was like, can I ask a question? Because I'm thinking, what is all of this swirling around me? And I can't stop it, right? And he goes, yeah, sure. Go ahead, ask a question. And I'm like, my mother's in her 80s, right? It's my daughter's grandmother. If something happens to her, I can't contact my daughter about that. And he goes, I cannot believe that you asked that. No. If you contact her either directly or indirectly for any reason, you will go to jail.
It's just, oh my gosh. So there's a 2-year protective order. You go through the 2 years. Protective order is up in 2022. What happened?
Let me tell you one more thing. So a year after this happened, I'm still reeling from the whole thing. You know, I don't know what to do. It's just a horrible thing. I mean, being a realtor, I've never even had a complaint against me in the Board of Realtors. And now I've got in the public record that I had a protective order filed against me from my own daughter. And so when I found out that I could get a copy of the court transcript a year later, I called into the court, and the lady that was the court reporter is the person that ended up being on the phone with me. And she said, okay, I would be glad to look this up for you. And yes, I'm the one that you would get the copy of the transcript from. And she's typing because I could hear her click, like, do you have your case number? And I'm like, yes. And she's typing in. And all of a sudden she goes, oh, wait a minute. Was this a mother and a daughter in I-Town Church? And I'm like, yes. And she goes, are you one of the parties in this case? And I said, yes, I'm the mother. And she goes, well, I was the one that was in there that day. Now, keep in mind, this is a year later, and she remembered everything.
Wow.
And she said, I could not believe how weird that was. And I go, well, what do you mean? And she goes, well, especially what happened at the end. And I'm like, what do you mean? And then I remember the judge made me leave the courtroom before. He was like, me and my friend that was in there, he goes, you two can leave. You just wait right there until they're gone. Like I'm going to harm her or something, right? So I leave. This court reporter tells me that when I walked out of the room that the people from I-Town cheered, Roberta.
They cheered?
They just ripped mine and my daughter's relationship to shreds, and they cheered over it. And these are people that are supposed to be Christians. Two of them were pastors.
Disgusting.
This was all by design. They planned this. And the facts prove it. I'm trying to keep my opinion at bay and only share facts with you because that's what's most important. But everything that I just told you about what happened in court, I have the court documents. I have all the receipts as to what happened.
Wow.
So for 2 years, I have a counselor that I go to. You know, I'm so confused about my thoughts about religion at this point, trying to just continue to live a happy life. But at the same time, it was such a devastating thing to go through. I literally felt like my daughter was stolen from me. I find out in the meantime that my daughter is not in contact with any of her old friends that she went to high school with. She's dumped everyone. She had gotten rid of her social media. She's living in a cocoon bubble at I-Town Church. Everything to do with her is right there at I-Town. The 2 years goes by. During those 2 years, I find out through the grapevine that my daughter bought a house, which I'm a realtor. I didn't get to share that experience with my daughter. She meets a guy at the church, gets engaged, gets married, and in September of 23, she had a baby. All of that I did not get to be a part of. But to back up and answer your question, my counselor that I worked with for those 2 years, she said, okay, Sandy, we're going to have to be really careful how you handle this when it's over. You don't want to just show up on her doorstep, you know, the day that it ends. You want to really take this kind of gently. And so when I found out that she got married, I sent her just a very nice but not overly sappy congratulations on your wedding card and put a very small note in there that said, I heard that you got married. I just want you to know that I'm always your mom. I always love you. I wish you and your new husband the best. I'm glad that you have someone special in your life. It's just a little, you know, very non-intrusive, like I didn't try to get together with her, nothing like that. Then when I found out that she was pregnant, I bought from her online registry, I bought her a book that was about mother-child relationship and the connection that you have. And I did the same thing. I mailed that to her with just a little note in there, the same kind of note, the connection that you're going to have with your child. There's nothing like it. It never goes away. I love you. That was it. I tried those two times to gently contact her. And then my counselor actually sent her a letter from her saying, you know, I have been working with your mom all this time and I would love to be able to help you and your mom reconcile. I would like to invite you to come in for a counseling session, you know, you and your mom and me. She never responded to any of those three contacts. So those were the only contacts that I had after the protective order was over. During the time of the protective order, I did nothing to violate it. I didn't contact her in any way. November of 2020, my daughter's father, I got a message that he was living in Florida. He had lung cancer and he only had about 2 days left to live.
Oh my God.
Took me right back to what I asked the judge in the court hearing, if there's an emergency. And I was told, no, you can't contact her. I could not contact her about her dad getting ready to die. My friend who knew about it, I didn't ask her to do it because that could have been mistaken as indirect contact with her. My friend knew about it and she contacted my daughter and she flew down there and saw him before he died. But I couldn't do anything. I mean, you know, I felt like, how can I not tell my daughter that her dad's dying in 2 days? I wasn't allowed to.
Wow.
February 28th. Of 2022, because we went to court on February 28th of 2020. That's when the protective order was over. I took my counselor's advice and I did not contact her during that time. You might remember there was an event that happened with Will Smith at the Oscars because his wife has the same medical condition that my daughter has. And you might remember that Chris Rock made a comment that was supposed to be a joke, but Will Smith took it differently and he got up and punched him in the face on live TV. Well, since at this point I had been an advocate for this medical condition for 15 years, people know me. I mean, worldwide, people know me. My phone and email blew up. Everybody wanted to know what my thoughts were. And so I got a call from an associate who works for a TV station down in Henderson, Kentucky. And he said, so what do you think about what happened? And I said, well, you know, violence is never the answer in any kind of situation. But as the mother of a daughter who has this condition, if I was on an international stage and I felt someone was making fun of the situation, I could understand the emotions behind it. And he goes, what a perfect answer. Oh my goodness, you know exactly how this all should work. And he goes, would there be any way that you could come on the news down here at our station? We can do it, you know, through Zoom if you want, but just share your feelings. And at first I'm like, oh my goodness, this protective order was in place for those 2 years of the protective order. I didn't do anything with our organization during that time. I didn't start any new projects. I didn't make any appearances. I just, you know, stepped back from everything. But I wanted to do this because they asked me my opinion and I wanted to share my opinion, especially if it helped someone to understand.
Right.
And so I battled a little in my head. It's like, okay, the protective order, but the protective order's over and the protective order didn't have anything to do with my organization. So it shouldn't be a problem, but I also didn't feel like I could contact my daughter and ask her opinion either. It was a pretty day. It was in April of what would have been 22. I said, you know what? I'm up for a road trip. I think I'll just drive down and do it in the station. And he's like, oh my goodness, you would do that? That would be amazing. We would love to have you. So I go down and I do the interview and it all goes very well. Then it was posted online. Within just about 2 weeks of it being posted, I suddenly get an email from a very high profile attorney's office stating that they represent my daughter. And that my daughter does not want her name associated with anything to do with the organization that her and I both started. Well, I started it, her and I ran it, and then I ran it after that. 15 years total. To cut the story short, they basically took it away from me. And in my opinion, now this is just my opinion, I have no proof, but it really feels as if the protective order was over, and then they were like, okay, now how do we keep this young girl away from her mother?
It's just bullying.
Back in the beginning, I don't think I mentioned this, but just very quickly, I was told 3 years ago in the midst of all of this that way back when there was a business meeting that this young girl was in the meeting, and she specifically heard this said by Dave Summerall. Back when my daughter was just starting with iTown Church, we can use this young girl as the poster child for iTown to draw the young people in. So this entire thing was from day one by design. They wanted to use my daughter's notoriety that was gained by the organization that I created to basically exploit her image to build up the church. And that's why all of that time when I did not know what was going on, Roberta, that's why they were keeping me away from my daughter. And I do think that my daughter was being groomed all that time.
Yeah, I agree, especially after the episode with Dr. Amy and learning about spiders and how they groom us and how they groom our kids. Absolutely. I completely agree with you that she had been groomed since the moment that she stepped foot on that church. Soon as she was on that church property, they were like, oh yeah, we want her. She had the notoriety from the advocacy and all of the things that you had done with her. She was popular. She was well known. If this had been 10 years later, she would have been a viral social media account with hundreds of thousands of followers. That's the level of like influence that your daughter had as a child with her advocacy. And so a church to be able to get that and use it to bring in more young people and continue this. I mean, this is not unheard of. This is what these organizations do. They use people and they destroy people.
Yes.
For their own personal gain. I wonder how much money that church has brought in since your daughter has been an influence in their program.
They have so much money. It's just horrible. It's horrible.
And they use that money to bully you and silence you and to get right. you out of your daughter's life and make up lies.
Yes.
Make you seem like this horrific person who just right. is out to hurt her and harm her.
I think that they led her to believe that I was somehow exploiting her and I was making all this money off of the organization, which is not even true. I mean, if people wanted us to come and speak at their child's school, and they told me they didn't have one penny of a budget to cover expenses or anything, I never turned anyone down over money because it was about the message. You know, the message is that it's okay if you're different, educating people about it. And, you know, I feel like the reason that I wanted to share my story, because, you know, you and I have talked a lot, and I just want people to know that I had no idea that I could not trust a church with my child. when she was 14 years old, I blindly trusted these people with my daughter. And I kick myself every day for not being smarter about it. I should have looked under every rock. I should have found out everything possible about these people, but I just didn't know. And I don't want to see this happen to any other family.
And she just turned 27.
Today is her birthday.
So almost half of her life has been involved in this church, 14 to 27.
Yes.
Wow.
And two more quick things. The year that we were in court, so February 28th of 2020, I find out that on Mother's Day of that year, 2 months later, they have my daughter up on the big screen talking about, thank you for coming to spend this Mother's Day weekend with us here at iTown Church, where we love, celebrate, and appreciate mothers so much.
What?
Every time that they have her up on the big screen doing announcements, they give her a script. They gave her a script to say that after knowing that they contributed to her being in court with her own mother. Think of the harm that does to a young girl.
Oh my God. I know that there are people out there right now who listen to this story and listen to your story about you and your daughter who know about iTown, who have experiences with iTown, who have experiences with other ARC churches, who have experiences with the Summeralls, and any of the people that are involved within these organizations. If you are one of those people, if you are listening to the story and going, I know who this person is because you have personal connections or anything like that, and you can add anything to this story, if you can add anything to help Sandy ease her mind a little bit or get any information moving forward, please reach out. I know it's kind of a long shot, but sometimes we get another person that goes, oh my gosh, I thought I was the only one that knew about this. I thought I was the only one that experienced this. If you have something similar to this, please reach out. If you are a parent who has a family member who is stuck in an organization like this and can't get them out, please reach out. I know we've had other stories of people talking about their family members that have been stuck in other cults and other situations. So this story fits right in with others that we've told before. Sandy, I am so sorry that this happened to you, but I'm so proud of you for finally telling your story and opening up the lines of communication for this.
Yes. And thank you, Roberta, for giving me the platform. And thank you for being so patient in dealing with all of my emotions as we talked about this happening. But also now that I refer to this as a can of worms, you know, I knew as soon as I opened up this can of worms that I have to be very passionate about sharing my story. And, you know, any of your associates who talk about things like this, I am willing to go. I'm willing to share my story anywhere that it needs to be shared. Because again, I don't want other parents to be in the same situation that I was in.
Yeah.
Just blindly trusting other adults with your child. It's when I look back on it, I'm like, what was I thinking? You know, what was I thinking?
I know that you and I will keep in touch. And if there are any updates to this story, we will update you guys and pop it in the show notes or do a bonus episode or something like that to keep you updated with the story. Because, I mean, especially even after telling your story, sometimes people reach out. There might be somebody listening right now that knows you.
Right.
And goes, oh my gosh, I was there for all of this. They're in a completely different headspace now because they've learned and they've educated themselves. And they might be reaching out to you and saying, hey, Sandy, like, let's talk about this. I'm constantly surprised what happens after episodes are published and the public can listen to it and reach out and make connections. So we're hoping that there's somebody out there that can add to this story or help Sandy in processing all of this information and getting through this. Again, the call to action. If you are somebody in the similar boat, please reach out so that we can tell your stories too. It is just so heartbreaking. And like I said, I am so proud of you. And if your daughter is listening, she knows who she is. She knows who you are. And she is listening to this and she wants to speak. I would love to have her reach out as well.
And also I have actually had personal conversations with quite a few people who have left iTown. So my story is not the only one, but a lot of people are afraid to come out and share their story. I'm not afraid. I've went through everything. They've already, I feel as if I've been legally attacked twice. Both times I've learned a lot. I've gotten thicker skin over this. And the message of don't trust people is way more important than any risk that I take in coming out and speaking and sharing my truth.
Yeah. Well, I want to just say thank you and tell you that we are so proud of you and we are so glad that you had the courage to speak up and tell your story. Where can those of us who are following your journey want to learn more about you or follow you?
People can actually reach out to me on my just personal Facebook page. Now, keep in mind, up until now, I have not posted about my story. However, that's getting ready to change. I have my regular Facebook page is Sandy, S-A-N-D-Y, Ott, O-T-T, and then Rusk, R-U-S-K. You'll just see all my personal stuff on there, what I had for lunch yesterday and things like that. But you can contact me that way. And then I have an Instagram page that's Rusk Sandy. Again, that's a lot of my personal stuff. That's the name that you'll be able to find it under.
Well, at the end, I'd like to do some rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Oh, my. I know you do that. So let's try this, Roberta.
Okay, let's try. What is one word that encompasses how you feel about iTown?
I want to say the word demonic is what I want to say.
Give me a piece of advice to somebody listening who's thinking about getting involved in a church like iTown.
Please do not be blinded by the flash, because you feel like you're at a rock concert. You feel like you're listening to a motivational speaker that's kind of a comedian. Do not be blinded by the charisma and the stage presence and the show of it all. And definitely do not trust these people or any similar environment with your child, son or daughter.
We have to do an MLM one. So, Sandy, give me the worst MLM in your opinion.
Wow. Well, I know more about the LuLaRoe MLM thanks to your advocacy, and I've watched all the documentaries, so I'm really glad I never got involved in it. Because, you know, at the time, that did sound kind of good, having your own little store inside of your home, and you know what I mean?
Oh, I know what you mean.
It sounds like the worst one to me, Roberta.
I'll allow it.
Because it costs people so much money.
Oh my God, so much money, Sandy.
Yes.
What is the hardest lesson that you learned about your experience with iTown?
Well, the hardest lesson I learned is that you just can't trust people. And like you, I'm very good with research. I'm really good with research now compared to what I was back then. And, you know, I call it looking under the hood. I never looked under the hood at iTown Church. Now I look under the hood of everything. You just have to do your research, because we do live in a time where you can find things out. Even though I have to admit, iTown Church scrubs the internet. They scrub the internet and you can't find a lot of truth on there.
Yikes. And then lastly, a positive takeaway from your experience with iTown.
I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot. And I've learned, again, to be cautious and not to blindly trust situations. That's the only good thing I can come away with.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we will be updating as there are updates to your story. I just really want to say thank you and let you know how much I appreciate. And I know that you said, you know, when we first talked, you weren't ready. And that's totally normal. There are people that reach out and they're like, I have a story to tell. And in sort of talking, they're like, maybe I'm not ready to tell it yet. I think it took us maybe almost 6 months to tell Sandy's story, from going back with emails and having chats and texting. And so if you're one of those people that's listening right now saying, I have a story, but I don't know if I'm ready yet. I'm not a coach. Okay. But you're more than welcome to email me and say, I want to tell my story, but I'm not ready. And we can have conversations and we can do it just like we did with Sandy until you are ready. And Sandy was in charge of all of it. Sandy was the one that said, I'm ready to record. I'm ready to have these conversations. I'm ready to do this. So if this is something, this is the sign you needed to say, hey, you know what? I think I am ready to tell my story in July. Reach out.
Yeah. It's so true, especially in a situation like mine where they tend to intimidate people. They tend to intimidate people about coming out and talking about what happened to you there. They have their employees sign NDAs and they make you feel like, you know, we will come after you.
Yeah.
And that scares people. Nobody wants to have to go through that. But it comes down to the message is more important than the risk, as far as I'm concerned. And I want my daughter out of there.
Yeah.
I want her to realize that she's with people that do not have her best interest at heart. And that's why it was so important for me. And again, to share with other people that don't let this happen to you and your family.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
You've been great, Roberta. Patient, understanding, supportive. And you've provided this platform to be able to let people know what happened to me. And I can't thank you enough.
I can't thank you enough for being so vulnerable and sharing your story with us today. Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast or visit our website at lifeaftermlmpod.com. And don't forget to check out our Patreon for exclusive content and join the community on Discord. You can find all of the links to follow in our show notes. Life After MLM is produced by Roberta Blevins. Audio editing is done by the lovely Kayla Craven. Video editing by the indescribable RK Gold. And Michelle Carpenter is our triple emerald princess of robots. If you have a story about a cult, fraud, scam, or MLM and want to be on the show, please hit us up. We would love to help you tell your story and start your healing journey in life after MLM. See you next time, Hunts.